Welcome back, new talkers, to the Bob Davis Podcasts, Podcast 617, When You're Up to Your Ass in Alligators. We're going to talk about it in this podcast, Podcast 617. Before I get started, got to mention xgovernmentcars.com. Now, you guys have heard me talking about xgovernmentcars.com for a long time. I've had three Crown Vics. I have, of course, Mobile Podcast Command, which came from xgovernmentcars.com. And let me just bottom line, the big thing right now at xgovernmentcars.com is Ed Johnson has a line on Department of Homeland Security and former government expeditions and Yukons. But they're low mileage. And if you can get one of these with low mileage, you are really saving money, because if you had to buy a brand new SUV, you'd spend a lot of money. And the thing is, if you need a car, if you need a loan, and you have a job, you can get approved. Ex-government cars takes trades. They pay the highest values every day without all the bull. They also have the three-day peace of mind guarantee exclusively at ex-government cars. We call it the three-day love it guarantee. So here's what you do. First of all, go online at exgovernmentcars.com. Check out the selection. Remember, they've got the low mileage expeditions and Yukons from Border Patrol and DHS. So check it out, xgovernmentcars.com, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. You can call them old school at 763-777-8782.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Well, trade issues are going to be coming up relatively quickly, and trade issues are in the news these days with all the talk about foreign manufacturing and Donald Trump's views about NAFTA, things of that nature. So what's happening is some companies are preparing to bring manufacturing back to the United States. Now, there are reasons to manufacture in the United States, but if your company is considering bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., please consider American Manufacturing by Depot Star, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit Depot Star at depotstar.com. Well, it's Friday morning, and usually on the weekends, I would post the radio show as a podcast, and most of the time it had political content, which was concentrated, and it was hard to expand on ideas because I was locked in that constraint of having to do 10-minute segments, so you weren't able to expand on a concept like when you're up to your ass in alligators, and I chafed under that kind of a concept. So now on Fridays, if I want, I can sit down and I can say, well, you know, I've done a lot of podcasts this week that weren't really political. Now we have an opportunity to expand on something political and talk about that and go with that. So there's a lot I actually want to talk about. I didn't think there was, but I was eating breakfast and kind of thinking about stuff, and it turns out that I do have kind of a lot to talk about. So this all started with an email notification a few days ago of a meeting. Maybe it was last week. I don't remember now because it's been a busy week, which was entitled, Don't Let the Left Divide Us. Now, this is not a criticism of that meeting. I'm not even going to tell you what that meeting is because I don't even know what the seminar that was being presented by the meeting was. I'm sure it was great for the people that went. But I was reacting to the headline as a thought starter because I think there's a misnomer among people on the right or Republicans, and I'm not so sure they're the same thing anymore, that it's the left that's doing all this stuff to the Republicans because of the things that the left is doing. They're dividing the Republicans. And I thought to myself, you know, the left is not dividing Republicans. They're dividing themselves. And they did so a long time ago. So we're going to talk about that a little bit in this podcast. So one of the things I like about doing podcasting is I can pick and choose what to talk about. I spend a lot of time thinking, and that's work, actually thinking about what to talk about. It, you know, when you're on the radio every day, when you do a daily TV show, you don't really have time to think about what you're doing. You're just trying to figure out what you're going to do tomorrow. So the process of thinking about what you're talking about is usually suppressed and sometimes never even comes up because you're so busy trying to find something to talk about. So podcasters, especially if there's a little gap between each podcast, and especially if you're diligent about what podcasting is, as opposed to just cranking stuff out, and I've done both, by the way. When I first started podcasting, it was all about cranking podcasts out. And I did them a lot like I would do talk radio. But over time, as I explained in that podcast about quitting the radio show, that kind of changed because you learn that you don't have to hose stuff down again and again and again, which is a phrase we used to use in talk radio, because once you do a podcast, it's up there. You know, you don't need to go back and hose down something about the left or about Donald Trump or whatever, because you already did that podcast, right? So I actually, because of that, now spend a lot of time, and it's hard. It's hard work trying to thread this through this process going on in this country right now and thread the needle through all of this reactive stuff, trying to figure out whether this particular story today or tomorrow or next week is going to be significant. Because what I've seen is things that supposedly were going to be significant turned out to be not so significant later and vice versa. So you really have to think about that. And I talked about this a long time ago, and this is an example of how when you actually think about what you're thinking about and think about what you want to talk about and figure out what you think you should do a podcast about, you have a tendency to get ahead of the news. I personally think that I am ahead of the news anyway. Part of it is the way that I prep. But an example would be, I saw an interview that's up on various news channels now with Cheryl Atkinson, who used to work for CBS News and was famously left because she got into a tiff with the Obama administration. But she was talking about how now we are reacting to what she called the waves of coverage of small stories, or what I refer to as the daily outrages, rather than dealing with long-term policy questions. How many times have I talked about that in the podcast going back years? And then I also saw Vin Weber, who is a former Minnesota congressman and major lobbyist in Washington, talking about fissures in the GOP and the possibility of a GOP breakup with somebody, I forgot who now. And that's just two examples of things that I've been talking about for a long time that are now apparently, coming into the mainstream media's focus, let's just say. So it's easy to get ahead of myself with the podcasts. Sometimes I have to wait for events to catch up. And that means to watch events and see where they lead before I say, I'm going to talk about this. It's Marvel comic wisdom, but it's been said that if you want to know the truth, don't have an opinion. And I certainly have opinions, but I have held out from being a partisan. This is the first administration where I've decided to avoid a partisan identification and let things play out. And it's kind of nice. I arrived at this in an organic process that perhaps ended with covering the primaries. And it's, I think when you actually see retail politics at its best, you realize what it's all about, and that kind of sets you back. Now, some people take the fact that I refuse to be partisan as partisan. In other words, if the idea that if you're not for us, then you're against us. And if that's your feeling, that's your problem. An embattled populace circles the wagons mentally. So an embattled right is circling the wagons mentally. They don't want to not have an opinion, and they don't want people that don't have opinions, and they don't want people who are not partisans. So that's where you get this don't let the left divide us mentality. Don't let the left divide us. Here's what you do. I'm going to tell you what to do to prevent the division, because the left is not what is dividing Republicans. What's dividing the Republicans is a lack of adherence to principle. I talked about it in a couple of podcasts. You see it with the president and his staff and their strange agglomeration of ideas about economics and social policy. You see it with the speaker. You see it with go along, get along, this is how Washington works types, or, devolve that to your own local state capital, whether it's Springfield or St. Paul, or Madison. Freedom Caucus people have their problems, but at least they said, this is what we promised our voters, and this is what we should do when it came to the now famous Obamacare debacle. And so I want to talk a little bit about the Freedom Caucus, because the Freedom Caucus supported Trump, but disagreed on the Obamacare replace effort. It will be some number of years before we can figure out who was for Obamacare replace and repeal, the president or the speaker or what. And the support of the Freedom Caucus to the Trump candidacy netted them what? After some 60 days of the Trump presidency, he has now turned on them. And the implication here is that he'll abandon anybody that he doesn't like today, or he'll abandon any supporter as long as it suits him, at least he feels, to do so. So he'll eventually abandon moderates the same way, or Democrats who he's now talking about working with. And the bottom line here is that in politics, if someone is not dependable as an ally, as someone who will do what he says he'll do, well, then he's not someone that can be trusted. And if you can't be trusted on a vote, or if you can't be trusted on a certain idea in politics, then you are a man without a country, so to speak. So let's start with this by asking first whether Republicans are actually divided. In Washington, there are signs that they are, but that they're, you know, it's moderates versus Trumpers versus Freedom Caucus people, but it's a lot deeper than that because it goes to labels for what all these different coalition elements supposedly are. So if you go back to the 1980s, which is the current, you know, wellspring of the what we would refer to as the current Republican Party, it was religious conservatives, economic libertarians, and Cold War hawks. But we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. Now, supposedly, you have this thing called white rural populism. You have right-wing Christian traditionalists. You have moderates who are all about let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater types, and we know how the system works. And you have a few libertarian Ron Paul types left from the 2008 exodus. Somehow, what's dividing all these groups is now suddenly the media, or by extension, the left. And these reactive initiatives from the left, like the Women's March or the upcoming March for Science or whatever, or the videos that they put out or the memes, once again, it's some outside force dividing Republicans. But it's not. And I'm going to tell you why I think this. First of all, the labels. Let's talk about labels. There is no populist political party in the United States. Trump supporters are not populists. Trump is not a populist. Populism is, you know, a movement, and it was a political party in the United States going back to the late 1800s. And I've often talked about this. Populism basically represented farmers in the newly maturing Midwest. And I'm talking about rural Illinois and Iowa and North Dakota and South Dakota and Minnesota and so forth. You know, relatively small populations as a percentage of the United States who needed different kinds of banking and viewed money differently and had a little bit different lifestyle from Eastern industrial centers. You could say that they represented Jeffersonians, except they didn't, because they were struggling against, you know, the Eastern and urban interests, you know, and it really has nothing to do with today's political situation. Yes, rural America today is a little bit different sociologically from urban America, and that's where most of the comparison is. In other words, showing the differences between rural America statistically and urban America. But the fact is today, you know, media goes everywhere. So the kid that grows up in Utah is part of the same, you know, collective experience, at least from the media perspective, as the kid that grows up in urban Chicago. Now, their life experiences may be different, but they have access to the same kind of media, and they can communicate with each other in ways that were never possible during the late 1800s, where this populist movement took root because of very specific issues to those places. Modern populism describes movements that draw on the passions of the common man, in this case rural, but populism is a political tactic. You could be a populist and be for the urban common man just as much as being for the rural common man. That does not make you a populist. And Republicans are not populists. And there is no such thing as a populist Republican. They may be down with the coal miners in West Virginia because it serves them right now, and they may be down with the residents of small rural towns and cities, but other things have in the past drawn Republicans together, and other things will eventually draw Republicans together. So it isn't populism. One of the biggest problems we have these days is ignorance. It's ignorance when it comes to fleshing out details on policy and issues. It's ignorance when it comes to what actually caused Donald Trump's electoral victory in 2016. Ignorance does not mean stupid. I would hesitate to call the farmers in the populist Midwest in 1896 ignorant. They knew exactly why they were populist. What they refer to as populism today is much more reactive anger about stuff, like saying things like drain the swamp, right? That is what the media refers to as populism, but it isn't populism. Again, ignorant does not mean stupid. You can be very smart and be ignorant, like the professor who went ballistic because, you know, a soldier got given a first class seat on an aircraft that he was on. We can all point and laugh at that guy, but we're reacting to a Twitter and Facebook moment, and we do it with lots of other things, and we're reacting with no information. So I'm not defending this guy. That's not why I'm bringing it up. I'm just bringing it up as today's outrage. And we react this way with lots of other things, as I said, like it's the left that's dividing the Republicans. Samuel Taylor Coleridge wrote The Rime of the Ancient Mariner in 1834. And one of the lines, which is now, of course, famous, is water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. About a becalmed ship surrounded by salt water, you know, they couldn't drink the salt water. We are surrounded by a sea of information, news stories, memes, videos, reports, reactions to those reports, 24-hour cable news, you know, guests and live reports, talk radio, online. But we really can't drink any of that because it does not give us a perspective. Even podcasts like the Nerdcast, which are great, focus on reactive stories like whether there's enough votes to get a Supreme Court nominee through, things like that. What happens when you drink salt water, right? Well, that's what's happening to the voter in this country. We're drinking salt water and we are slowly poisoning ourselves. And we're doing it right and left. It isn't the left. It isn't the right. It isn't Alex Jones or Rachel Maddow or Rush, blah, 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 or anybody this week. It isn't Fox News or CNN. It's us going back to that well again and again and drinking that poisoned water. So we are being heated up and we are being cooled down. Monday's outrage becomes Friday's pleasure, which was true yesterday and it's no longer true today. An action that somebody takes on, you know, in February is suddenly moot in March and so on. So we are heated up and cooled down in order to keep watching. And really no further explanation is required. It's bad information. Because meanwhile, after all of this consumption of salt water, are you any smarter when it comes to North Korea? James Mattis said this week that we have to do something about Kim Jong-un. What would you like to do? What would you have them do? And how informed are you on it? Well, I was in Korea when I served in Korea in the 1970s when I was in the Army. Okay, well, that doesn't make you an expert on foreign policy when it comes to North Korea. You know more about Korea than I do because you've been there, but that doesn't make either one of us an expert on it. Any ideas about what we should do or what we need to do other than, you know, something like somebody needs to handle this? What would be involved in handling the leader of North Korea or eliminating the North Korean nuclear program? Would it be diplomatic? Would it be special forces or a missile strike? And if we did something like that, if we handled Kim Jong-un, what would the reaction be from China, from Russia, from South Korea, from Japan, and on and on and on? It's the same on the economy. They did not repeal Obamacare, but suddenly they're going to do tax reform. Except consider this. The failure to repeal Obamacare makes it almost impossible to do tax reform because the most onerous taxes and penalties in the federal tax system are in the ACA, and the most onerous budget deficits come from the ACA. So when the president pivots to so-called tax reform, the fact is no matter what they do with tax reform, they aren't going to ease the middle class burden with tax reform because the numbers just won't add up. The thing that they needed to do first was repeal Obamacare and the entire regime and not replace it with anything, then do tax reform. So you see where we're going with the information, if that's what you wanted. I mean, if you don't want that, then it would be a tax increase, or it would be another way to look at it if you're a Democrat. So I'm not making a judgment about Obamacare so much as saying for Republicans, this is what you needed to do. What about things like budget cutting? What, where, and why? Things like stimulus, monetary policy, regulatory regimes enacted by Congress, trade, the effects of trade protection versus free trade, as in David Ricardo's theory of comparative advantage, and the details of trade agreements and what they mean. What about issues in the community like transit, regional planning, farm subsidies, federal agencies in urban areas are widely pilloried for doing things like providing welfare. But what about federal agencies that focus on rural areas, whether it's farm subsidies or initiatives like opening Cuba for trade relations with the U.S. so U.S. farmers in places like Minnesota and Wisconsin can sell goods to Cuba? Again, not saying I agree with it, but that was the impetus behind that. What about the history beyond the U.S. Constitution? You know, Republicans are steeped in the founding fathers' fife and drum. They know all about the Constitution or a certain view of the Constitution. What about American political history during those periods of time that nobody really cares about, like the 1830s, the 1840s, Western history, and on and on and on? It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm saying study that stuff. I'm saying there is a world of information, fresh water for your brain that we're not getting because we're drinking salt water and eating the brine that is poured out of the sewer of day-to-day media. As I said, people who don't know anything talking to people who don't know anything. Where does it all lead? Well, it should lead to a discussion of principle. Why do you vote? If you're involved, why are you involved? What was the reason that you got involved? What is the goal of the so-called Republican Party? What are the principles? Is it the Freedom Caucus? Is it the moderate? Are you religious? Are you a strict constitutionalist, a libertarian? What does all that mean? How do you work with other people that maybe have different points of view in your own party? All those questions are really important, and those are just scratching the surface. If a political party can follow a single or two or three, maybe, at the most, principles, collectively, nothing can divide it. No initiative from the left or right, no day-to-day news coverage. But that isn't what's happening, though, is it? You have a president whose initial legislative flourish, the repeal of ACA, failed. This is a promise that he broke, because he ran afoul of a group of congressmen who wanted to do what they told their constituents they came to do, repeal ACA, and they should have. Now, the president blames the people who supported him, the people who fought for him, his strongest advocates. Where is the principled leadership now? So Churchill's classic, The Gathering Storm and Into the Storm, books detailing his World War II experience have been made into movies. And if you watch them or if you read the books, you'll see that he never wavered. When no one was listening to Churchill, he soldiered on and eventually became, at an advanced age, the 20th century's greatest leader. He saved the Western world from tyranny, which is why his bust was in the Oval Office in the United States President's House to begin with. He maintained focus on his primary purpose, his principle: never give up. What's the Republican principle? Nobody can tell you. And what's worse, really, is no Republican that I've talked to actually knows enough to discuss policy and why this principle should be followed or not. And yes, up to and including even elected officials. Oh, they can talk about the latest outrage. They know all about Comey and Nunes and the wiretaps, the saltwater claims surrounding the political ship, the USS Republican. But when it comes to the why, the actual history and policy, many of them are lost. The moderates turn the religious right at their will. The religious right is usually the moderate Republicans' bitch. Why? Because they sell you this anti-abortion and religious Christian worldview, anti-Muslim, anti-anti-anti, to package up somebody like Marco Rubio or Paul Ryan, who will sell you a pig in a poke. And why don't I like Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio? Why don't I like moderates? Aside from the fact that they made a Faustian bargain with a man who has no political principles other than a desire to make America great again, that's what they do. They basically say, we're Christians, or we're really Americans. And then what do they do? Well, to explain that, I'm going to have to take a little detour. we are living in an American socialist construct. Now, specifically, it's not real socialism per se, where the so-called community as a whole owns and regulates and oversees the means of production, as opposed to communism, where the government owns all the means of production. But it's pretty close to what we have had since the mid-1930s. One definition is a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. When what we should have is an economic and political system in which the country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit rather than by the state. That would be capitalism. When you depend on the state's approval to develop your land, when you depend on state contracts and permits to run a successful business, when everything you do is dependent on a regulation or a tax, when the government takes a substantial part of a human being's property and redistributes it to those who it deems worthy, corporate and individual, to reallocate resources through mandatory taxation, and so on. What is that? It is a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. And that is the construct that we have been living in since the 1930s. So without going on and on, basically it created a stronger federal government. And the main purpose of that structure is really to send out checks and to make beholden to the government farmers, veterans, old people, young people, you know, who are going to college, companies and vendors who depend on government contracts, education, defense, foreign government aid, and to interests we have in foreign lands, to the intelligence and security interests and so forth and so on. Not a complete list, but you get the idea. We have the Federal Reserve controlling the money. We have state and regional planning agencies. We have executive departments like labor, transportation, agriculture, on and on and on, not to mention entitlements. Governments defend, secure, build roads, run national and state parks, manage resources, and they also spy on citizens, intervene in their personal lives, arrest and incarcerate them, and have immense power to affect the individual. You don't think that's intimidating? Immense power vested in governments. And who runs it? 535 members of Congress, or 10 or 12 citizens from this state, another 100 or so individuals at the state level, hundreds at the county, city, and regional levels, hundreds more at the advisories, hundreds of thousands of federal and state employees. In fact, according to some sources, government workers outnumber privately employed workers 2 to 1. So what is that? That's a political construct called socialism, where the government controls the means of production, distribution, and exchange, either by regulation or direct control. People on the right shake their heads and wonder why people don't understand them when they call Democrats socialists. But the truth is, the United States has been living under a socialist construct since the 1930s, and the Republicans are part of it. So labels like Christian conservative, moderate Republican, left or right, conservative or liberal are meaningless, truly. We're all socialists, whether we like it or not. Now, if you want to change that, it means throwing the whole Republican and Democrat playbook in the trash and starting over. Now, this is for people who want to start over. Some people think this is great, and they think we just need to strengthen these systems and this means of control so that it works better. And that's fine. If that's what you believe, then great. But for the right, until you throw out the playbook and develop new principles, you're just going to basically follow one lie after another, and you're just going to get one more politician after another, whether it's Donald Trump, who claims to be an outsider, or somebody else like a Bush or a Clinton, who's just going to do the same thing. You're going to get state and national politicians who say things to make you believe they are conservatives, perhaps like I'm against abortion or I believe in Jesus. But when they get in office, they will perpetuate the belief and the action that governments ameliorate all sin and pain and use your tax dollars to do it. Now, I could almost hear Republicans saying, but wait, Social Security is my money. I've heard them say it. And my response to that is, if you think it's your money, then call them up and tell them that you want all the money that you contributed to Social Security when you retire instead of just $1,300 a month. You'll find out that it's not your money. They'll say, I'm for free speech, unless Rachel Maddow or Black Lives Matter is speaking or blocking the freeway, and then suddenly they're not for free speech. By the way, they feel the same about you. They're for free speech on the left until you say something. Donald Trump was bugged. The outrage. Something must be done. We have to show that President Obama is a felon. Moreover, that material was shared with others in the intelligence community and leaked to the press. Oh, the outrage. How terrible. By the way, under an executive order designed to allow the intelligence community better access to surveillance products that Obama signed, for what reason? To defend the country against terrorists. But okay, we can't have Trump being surveilled. But damn it, if we had been able to surveil those San Bernardino shooters or those Boston Marathon idiots, none of this would have happened. And by the way, President Trump has not rescinded the executive order that allows that interagency sharing. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? This all started with 9/11. A Republican president was thought to be able to or should be able to do whatever was necessary to get those terrorists. And then Obama became president. And wait a minute, he's a socialist. We can't have him surveilling us. So suddenly I'm against surveillance and I'm for the Fourth Amendment, but not when my guy's president. And that's what's dividing Republicans. It's not the left. It's the fact that Republicans, flag bearers for a party that was founded on the principle of individual freedom, do not have principles. They're just a bunch of angry people who want what they want that the media has taken to calling populists. In many cases, I hate to say it, mere children, well advanced in age, they like to call leftist young women snowflake, but they are very much the same. They're very immature politically. They want the country to be like it was in the 1950s, except it wasn't that great in the 1950s for a lot of reasons. Don't have time to detail them here. The question should be, what kind of world do we want to live in? Do we really want free markets? Because a capitalist society makes a lot of demands on the individual. Are we really strong enough to allow individual freedom? Can you handle somebody else's opinions? Can you handle somebody else putting up a pole barn in their backyard? Do you know enough to be able to discuss issues without walking away in anger, without resorting to bromides? Because that's where you have to start. That's where the principles start. Because people who truly believe in capitalist freedom really know the arguments, and they have to know the arguments because they're responsible for themselves. Being Republican because you don't want light rail or because you believe in Jesus isn't going to be enough. Because what you're going to end up doing is going in there and voting for Marco Rubio, because it's a principleless stand. Freedom is radical. It was radical in the 1700s. It's really radical now. It's the most radical left-wing thing that you can be, is for freedom. Essentially, the liberalization of individual life based on unalienable human rights. The French tried it right after we did. They had a great example, and they couldn't pull it off. We managed it for 100 or so years, and then it ended in the Civil War and eventually led to the socialist construct that we currently live under. So if you're really a Republican, what is left of the Republican principle may free us all from a form of slavery, a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole, which essentially means giving pernicious and malicious and dangerous mendacious power, or power that could be used mendaciously, to a government. Now, maybe that's okay with you and you just don't know it, and that's fine. If we want that kind of a system, then fine. But a political and economic theory of social organization that, and so on and so on, that advocates the means of production be owned by the community is what we have been living under for at least two generations. And change isn't going to get done by waving the flag and praying. And you can do that if you want. Some would even encourage you to do that. But change takes real thinking and work. First, change to what? Second, what needs to be done? Third, who's going to do it? Fourth, what are the arguments? Fifth, why? And that's just a thumbnail list. It's complicated, right? Now, finally, we're getting running out of time. I can go for another hour, but I'm not going to. There are a number of comparisons of the United States to the Roman Empire. I don't like referring to my country as an empire for a lot of reasons too detailed to go into here. But there are parallels between Rome, especially in the latter half of its existence as an empire, and the U.S. And one of them is the confusion and eventual perversion of the purity of the original founding principles. People either forgot them or didn't didn't bother to learn them to the extent that Emperor Justinian rewrote the Roman legal code. Note that it was an emperor, because there were so many laws they did not understand what they intended. Justinian cleared out the rat's nest and, quote-unquote, drained the swamp, so to speak, and recodified Roman law. Now, Trump made a big deal out of claiming he was being sent to Washington to drain the swamp. Let me tell you a little story about this slogan, drain the swamp. My dad loved to decoupage, and he liked to get little sayings and have my mom do them in Old English lettering, and then he would decoupage, attach this little piece of paper to a piece of wood. This was my father's favorite saying. He had plaques saying it all over the house. But there's actually more to it than drain the swamp. The saying, at least according to my dad, is actually, when you're up to your ass in alligators, it's hard to remember your original objective was to drain the swamp. It seems to me the president and the Republican Party in general is up to its ass in alligators, and the alligators are hungry. Now, speaking of pernicious government power, I can't help but think of xgovernmentcars.com. They have the line on the low mileage Department of Homeland Security, Expeditions, and Yukons. Check out the selection. They also have the Dodge Chargers and the Crown Vicks while they last, and the Ford Police sedans and Ford Police SUVs, the Impala V8s, and more. xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
So yesterday I went out to Hudson to get my meeting with my friends at Zero3D.com. This is the great company that makes great motorcycle products and accessories, including phone holders. And I got a complete tour and a review of the products like foot pegs and lighting options. I've been talking about the safety features involved with the lighting options. You know, they're really bright LED rear lights, turn signals, things of that nature. But I'm really hyped about the phone holders. Those guys put two in mobile podcasts command, so I won't lose my phone when I'm storm chasing, and I'll tell you more about that later. So here's the deal. If you ride, and if you're riding this spring, I'm already hearing motorcycles, I'm already seeing motorcycles, and those lighting options are so important to see motorcycles. Happy spring and ride safe. Check out Zero3D.com, C-I-R-O, Zero3D.com. Click on the banner at the top, the Bob Davis Podcasts, at thebobdavispodcast.com, or just go to their page, 03D.com. Thanks to you guys for liking, sharing, and favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter. And of course, thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening at Stitcher.com, especially subscribing at iTunes, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com, right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com with the streaming audio. Also, you can click on each podcast. It takes you to a page for that podcast, and you can listen to it right there. You can listen to it if you turn off the streaming right on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Enough business. Let's have a weekend.